I'm going to give a talk this evening on something which is very topical because somebody told me today that Australia got hammered again by the English at cricket and they're feeling very depressed. So the first thing I would like to admit that I did not do any chanting for the English team. Even though I was born in London, I am totally innocent. But the talk this evening is going to be on winning and losing, because that is something which has crept into our society, a society where we celebrate winners and we feel just so upset and depressed we're on the losing side. And in all aspects of our life, that creates an enormous amount of suffering, and the very idea of a winner and a loser is something which is totally against the spiritual path. But nevertheless, we live in a society where we celebrate winners and we feel very guilty and upset when we're losers, to the point that one of the worst things you can call anybody in today's society is a loser. But when you think about it, monks, the three men you see sitting in front of you, we are the biggest losers. We've lost all of our money. We've lost all of our possessions, and we spend our whole time seeing how much more we can let go of. In fact, the closer you are to enlightenment, the more you've let go, the more you have lost, the bigger loser you are. So you might say the biggest loser in history was the Buddha. He lost his wife, he lost his family, he lost his inheritance. He lost everything. Now you can actually see that being a loser is actually a wonderful thing. So I really recommend it. Be a loser like me. But it gives another aspect of what it means by winning and losing. And for those who are traditional Buddhists, and just to show that I do actually know my Buddhist texts, that's one of the great sayings in the Dhammapada, verse 201, you can look it up for yourself to check me out. That, it does say there, that victory just breeds hatred, and the defeated live in pain. Happy are those who are equanimous, living beyond victory and defeat. I thought that's a wonderful little saying of the Buddha. Happy are those who can live beyond victory and defeat. And you look at that, what does that mean in this world? I just remember just one of my fellow monks, and he told me this story. When he was at school, one of his best friends was one of these athletes. He was like a long distance runner, and he would win every competition. And first of all, the school competition, and then the sort of the county competition, and then the country competition. He was the champion long distance runner for the British schoolboys. And he would never lose a race. And then one day, inexplicably, he lost. And my friend, who was a monk, just went up to him and said, "How come you lost this time? What went wrong?" And this champion, who people were thinking going to sort of go and represent sort of that country in the Olympic Games, who was doing that well, he said, "I finally realized I didn't need to win." And that was such an amazing statement, because he had forced himself, he had tortured himself. He was in such pain running these long distance races and training and training and training. There was such an amount of suffering for him because he had this idea, he must always win. And he had this great insight, I don't always need to win. He never won another race, but he was a very happy person afterwards. Now do you understand? So sometimes this idea that in life we must always be the winners. Winners are grinners, losers are boozers. And they have to go to the pub and drown their sorrows. I mean, what a silly idea that actually is. Because what it mainly does, it puts all this pressure on us all the time to compete and always succeed. And it puts this terrible pressure on us. The worst thing we can possibly do is to lose and be a loser. And you imagine the psychological pressure on the majority of people when we're just winning is success and losing is great failure. For those of you who were here last week for my Ajahn Brahm's party, yes, we had a competition. And I gave prizes. I gave prizes for the people who scored the most. But did you notice? I also gave exactly the same prize to the people who came last. And why did I do that? Because in Buddhism, you know, we value not just those arrogant, proud, up here sort of winners, just we value the humility, so the sacrifice, so the lack of self for those people who come last. They are the real Buddhists. They are the ones who are selfless, who don't mind giving up the prize for others. You take the prize. You win first of all. You know that some years ago, I wrote this in a book, some years ago I thought that why don't we actually start a Buddhist soccer team or footy team? Have you ever noticed apparently that one of the Australian cricketers is a Muslim? Why don't we have a Buddhist cricketer? There's a good reason why we don't have a Buddhist cricketer. Because imagine if we had a Buddhist AFL football team. What would it actually do, according to Buddhist principles? What they really do, because compassion. If the other team wanted the ball, take it, it's yours. Because we run on compassion. You know, if they really wanted it, let go, you take it. And if they can't score the goal themselves, you know, you help them. No, come a bit closer, you know, kick this way, not that way. Because isn't that what Buddhism is all about? Like love and compassion and letting go. That's why we don't have any Buddhist cricketers in the Australian team. Because if they did, if the other person was really suffering because they couldn't score enough sixes, you'd lob one up for them. Come on, hit it hard. And the last thing you want to do is actually catch the ball of disappointment by getting them out. So Buddhists would always, on purpose, they drop the catches because we don't want to cause suffering to other people. That's why we don't have any Buddhist cricketers. Because Buddhists, winning and losing, that creates so much pain. And I can't see why in our society, because we have a society of always praising winners, that we're really missing the point here. Even, you know, I was a Buddhist when I was at school and university. And even when I was at university, you know, I wanted to play soccer just for fun. And I didn't mind competing as long as it didn't really matter who was going to win the game. And the last game of soccer I ever played in my whole life, I was playing just for college. I mean, it's not just a Premier League. It's not even the sort of universities versus universities. It's just for fun on a sort of an afternoon, get some exercise. But that last game I ever played, 11 of our team turned up and only 9 of the other team turned up. And so it's a totally one-sided game. And I think at half-time, for those of you who know it's soccer, we're about 6-0 up. And it's total whitewash. A complete waste of time. So what did I do at half-time? I went up to my captain and said, look, would you mind if I play for the other side in the second half? You know, just to make a game of it. And just like imagine sort of, you know, if one of the English cricketers say, is it all right if I bat for Australia in the second innings? You know, just to make a competition of it. Now, that's what a Buddhist would do. Because, you know, it's a game was more important, not winning and losing. What's the point of winning when it's so one-sided? It's no fun at all. So when I said that to my captain, can I play on the other side? Oh, he swore at me. Of course you can't, you know, I can't say the words he said here because I'm a Buddhist and this is on the internet. I get in big trouble what I say already. So he said no. And that was it. I never played any more soccer for that team. Didn't want to. So instead, my sport, for the rest of the time I was in Cambridge, I think I told a few of you, I wanted to have a sport which in no way can you think that winning is important or losing is a failure. So you know the one sport which I represented Cambridge at, the only sport which I represented the university at during my college years, Tiddlywinks. There was a Tiddlywinks club. And I thought, look, Tiddlywinks, no way can take that seriously.
And of course we didn't.
We had great fun. Because that's what I thought was sport was supposed to be. It didn't really matter. Well, winning, yeah, you try your best, but you don't really mind so much. For me, it was the game was most important. And that, of course, the spiritual life, the end point of the journey, that's not the point. It's how you get to that end point. The journey is always more important than the destination. And how many people have been living their lives just thinking of the destination and missing the journey? How many people, even when they go on holiday, are thinking, let's do this, let's do that, ticking off all the things which you've achieved, rather than enjoying them when you're there? Isn't the journey the most important thing, not the destination? Even tomorrow morning, I've just been going off to Sri Lanka. I've seen so many people in the plane. How long does it take to get there? When are we going to reach there? How many more hours to go? For goodness sake, you're wishing away your life. And even on your aircraft there, there's so many things you can do. You can meditate, you can talk to somebody, you can enjoy so many stuff on there. But why is it we're always wishing away our life, trying to get to the destination? And you know where we're always headed. This is where we're headed. This is why somebody pulled me up about a month ago, and I praise them for this. They said, Ajahn Brahm, how are you going? I know I'm really, really busy. I get lots of responsibilities sometimes. And I say, I'm getting there. And they said, where's that? And it really made me think. Have you ever said that? You know, how are you going? I'm getting there. Where are you going? I realized where I was actually getting was just a Calcutta or Fremantle. That's where I'm going to end up, or Pinneroo. So when any of you, those are the three cemeteries, okay, in Perth, the three crematoriums, Pinneroo, Calcutta or Fremantle. So whenever someone says, I'm getting there, you know where they're getting. It's not a matter of getting there, it's actually being here. And so the whole idea of winning and losing is trying to get to some destination. And both those destinations are really not the things to really be focusing on. It's a journey, it's a game, it's just if you're enjoying the contest. Yeah, it's great to compete, you know, because that sort of really sort of starts to get your energies up. It starts to make you strive, gets you this beautiful energy, but it really doesn't matter whether you win or lose. The game is the important thing. The same in life, it doesn't matter if you're rich or you're poor. It's just how you become rich, how you become poor. It's not the sort of the goal, it's always the journey. That's why all this like winning and losing stuff just really doesn't make any sense to me as a religious person, as a spiritual person. It's even sometimes, you know, that just we have these interfaith debates. It doesn't matter who wins and who loses in interfaith debates. I'm not there to sort of get one over on the Christians or the Muslims or whatever else and prove who's the best religion. Because that just really doesn't make sense in our modern world. Does that make sense to you? You know, which religion is the best? That's just competition again. And of course, we will never end such competition. And that's where we get wars from. It doesn't matter who's the best, it's how we can work together. Which is the best flower in the garden? Which is the best instrument in the symphony orchestra? Which is the best monk in Bodhinyana Monastery? Doesn't really matter because we all got our strengths and weaknesses. We work together. So instead of competing, we have this beautiful sense of cooperation, enjoying the journey together. And really, in any sort of cricket match, it's 22 people enjoying the afternoon together. It doesn't really matter about winning or losing. It's just the enjoyment of the game and just how we play that match. And if we play that match in the sense of like peace and harmony and enjoyment, winning or losing doesn't really matter. We had a wonderful time. Yeah, sometimes we lose, sometimes we lost, but we had a great time doing it, all of us. And to me, that's what life is all about. It's not about being a winner or even being a loser, which is one of the reasons why we praise humility, because what being a winner actually creates, it creates these terrible egos. I don't know if you know that old saying, power corrupts and absolute power corrupts absolutely. Success corrupts, and absolute success corrupts absolutely. People think they're invincible. People think, you know, because they've been winners so many times, they can do whatever they like. Ben Cousins, for good example. I remember actually just, this was an Australian rules footballer who got into trouble with drugs. I remember actually meeting him once on a radio show. Over in, I was trying to teach him how to levitate so he could catch that ball much higher. He was like an AFL footballer I met over in the radio show some time ago. But you see, so many of these famous sports stars become just impossible people to live with, who are flawed personalities. And why actually is that? And actually you can see that just when you take on the identity of being a winner, a winner, a winner, a winner, a winner, that gives you this incredible sense of ego, of being able to control your destiny, because every time you tried hard, you succeeded, you've won this and you've won that and you've won something else. And it does make you the control freak. Success feeds into the illusion that you can make it work, that you can make it happen. And that's the biggest danger of human beings. Imagine a person is being very successful at sport. They manage just to kick those goals. They manage to sink those putts. They manage to smash those aces. They think they're so powerful that when they get a relationship with you, they think they can control you as well. They can smash, they can sink the putts, they can do whatever they want. And that makes them a very arrogant person to live with. So if you're looking for a partner, try a loser. They're much easier to live with. They're far more grateful. I'm so terrible at everything. And that you want to love me? Oh, wonderful. I will love you to bits back. Because they're so humble. They're so grateful that you can actually look after them. You want to marry me? Oh, wonderful. Yes, I'll take anything. So don't marry a winner. That causes you a lot of trouble. So the trouble with like winners, it feeds into this arrogance and this ego. And you all know one of the most important parts of Buddhism, this idea of like, you know, who am I? This idea of non-self. This idea of, look, you know, stop sort of identifying with all these achievements which you have. If you identify with these achievements, sometimes you do get this terrible big head which makes you impossible to live with. And I remember even at the college I was at, when I was at Cambridge, they had a lot of very successful sports people. And there was this one guy in our college, he was voted the Young Cricketer of the Year. You know, that he was going to play for England. He played for Young England at that time. And he was just a pain in the butt to be with. No one liked him. He was just so arrogant, just really just a snooty, terrible thinking of himself as the bee's knees of everything. Just because he could hit a cricket ball didn't mean he was a great person. But that's what he thought he was. And no, these are people you actually got to know, and you wish you'd never known them. And when I saw just how arrogant such people are, I thought, my goodness, is that really worth? Is success really worth it, by being such an awful person to be with? And I realized that just when you'd have this winning, 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 winning sort of idea, this always competing, always being the best, always being the top, what it really turns out as is it just makes you just a very unhappy person. Just, you don't have to always be a loser, but just being somewhere in the middle there. Yeah, you lose sometimes, you win sometimes in life. When you lose, you don't blame yourself. When you win, you don't praise yourself. This is just life. Sometimes you win, sometimes you lose. So you take life as it comes, you're more at peace with things. You don't think you're the best, you're not the worst, you're just you. And when you have that attitude towards life, that's a sense of, not sort of the humility which always thinks you're the worst, 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 but this very balanced, emotional at ease with yourself. Being at peace with the times which you lose. Yeah, you lose sometimes. And when you lose sometimes, you actually see the benefit in losing, because when you lose, you know, anything in life, you learn so much from it. That's why one of the greatest sayings in English literature, I'm sure you know who said this, it's better to have loved and lost than to have never lost at all.
You see, I twisted it around, as I always like twisting things around.
That's Shakespeare said, you know, it's better to have loved and lost than never loved at all. He doesn't know what he's talking about. But it's better to have loved and lost than never to have lost at all. What that really means is you've learned so much when you've lost the love. It's when you learn so much, you know, through the disappointment of life. You learn so much, you know, when a loved one of yours dies. It's better to have loved and lost than never to have lost at all. When you understand that, you understand why losing is a beautiful thing. Because in losing, it's where we really learn the nature of life. And when we're just winning, 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 we're just living in a fantasy and an illusion. A bubble which one day will burst. And of course, you all know what happens when the winners, they lose for the first time. And they cry and they go ballistic. They go crazy, psychotic. I've lost, why did that happen? They're actually getting real at last. So it's beautiful to have lost. Because in that losing, sort of your idea of superiority, your idea of controlling the universe, your idea of being the best, all disappears. And instead, you become one of us. You join the greater band of losers. Winners are very, very few and are very isolated. They're so alone being a winner. But when you're a loser, you join the rest of humanity. Welcome back. And it also means you can relax. Because winners are always so tense. You know, some of these people are, sometimes you read these articles about sports stars, about movie stars, about TV stars. You see people on TV, what they have to do to keep their figure. They have to diet, they have to exercise, they go through so much pain. As for me, I'm not a TV star. I can eat whatever I want. I don't mind. And I don't have to do so much exercise as other people do. So, really, what are people doing this for? You know, that elite is a very lonely world. And just being an ordinary human being and actually joining the crowd means your ego is disappearing. And instead you have the emotional connection with the rest of humanity. Flawed humanity, which sometimes loses. You're making at peace with your reality. Because the reality of life is, yes, sometimes we win, sometimes we lose. Sometimes we succeed, sometimes we fail. And as I mentioned in a talk a few weeks ago, this is loving the reality which we call life. Making peace with life. Not conquering all the peaks of life, but loving them. Realizing that some peaks are totally beyond your reach and will always be beyond your reach. But that's beautiful. You don't have to climb every mountain in the world. You can actually stand below while these people are killing themselves trying to conquer these mountains. You've already conquered it. You can just look at it. I can already see the top, the summit from where I'm standing down here. I don't know why you want to go up there. Because when you go up there, you only have to come back down to where I am afterwards. You can't stay on the top of Mount Everest for too long. So understanding that means you can be more at peace with life. You can more be happy with life. Because when you always want to be a winner, you're striving and struggling to be something you will never be able to become. All winners must eventually lose. That's why I always thought about examinations. I was doing well in examinations when I was school. I was always succeeding. I was winning the prizes. Then finally you failed an exam. At last. Now I don't have to struggle so much. I always say to kids at school, the sooner you fail an exam, the sooner you can stop taking exams. If you keep passing them, there's always another one next year. And you all know, you've seen that great book, Daniel Goleman's Emotional Intelligence. Just because you do well at school and university, it doesn't mean you're going to be a balanced human being. Emotional intelligence was the key predictor to future success in life. And what do I mean by future success? Being a balanced human being. And I'm a successful human being. I don't mind saying this. I just found out today because one of our very early members of our Buddhist society, some of you may know, remember Ratana? Ratana Faust. She's an old disciple. She died about 20 years ago now, isn't it? Sometimes about that. She's an amazing woman. She was a woman who, when she got lung cancer, we always thought it was an allergy. She was always finding it hard to breathe, you know, because there's hay fever when she comes to monasteries, but it was actually lung cancer. So as soon as she was diagnosed in Charles Garden Hospital, was it Royal Perth? I forget now. But anyway, as soon as she was diagnosed with lung cancer, she called me and I sort of dropped what I was doing and went to see her straight away. And about an hour and a half after the diagnosis, I was in her room. And she was so at ease and peace with the fact that she was going to die. She had four young kids. And she was so at peace with her death. And she started making all these arrangements and started telling jokes. She was a Thai woman. So she said, please tell the Thai women not to see me now. They can see me later when I'm in my coffin. Ha 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 ha. But as soon as, you know, we made all the funeral arrangements for her, and it took about 20, 30 minutes, then I left her room, and then there was this elderly nurse. I found out she was actually the matron of the hospital. That's the top nurse. And she saw me and said, I'm glad you come. Come in here, please. And so I followed her into this room and said, I'm so glad you've come. That woman you've just seen, she's in denial. She's not accepting the fact she's going to die. So what do you mean? We've just been spending the last half an hour discussing her funeral. And she said, but she's not crying. She's not upset. I said, yeah, that's what Buddhists are like. Now I'll come and tell you something about Buddhism. And that was the first time this nurse has obviously been in this hospital for a long time. The first time she's encountered anybody who has just been told they were going to die with the cancer, who wasn't at all upset. He said, no, this is the Buddha's attitude towards life and death. We take life as it comes. We're at peace with things. She's getting old. You know, why would anybody be upset about changing their vehicle to something more modern and updating it? That's all that death is. You just, you know, this old model of yours, this old bomb, you know, which is running out of steam, which really needs replacing, you know, you get a much better model. Wouldn't you like to do that? What car did you drive when you came here? Wouldn't you like to get a brand new Ferrari? So, I mean, why are we so afraid of dying? But she was, and this was that lady. And so it's a great sort of woman. But I just actually, her kids, they never did well at school, the four of them. But I just found out, because the eldest daughter, Erica, visited the monastery today, you know, that her younger brother, Herb, he actually won Iron Chef a little while ago. Herb Faust, he's the chef at Scotch College now. And there's a guy, this was a guy who never did well at school, and he's incredibly successful in life. You know, he beat the Iron Chef or something on TV, the first time that sort of one of these people had beaten Iron Chef. I don't know what Iron Chef is, it's a TV program. Does anyone watch Iron Chef? Anyway, it's supposed to be quite an achievement. But, you know, that's an amazing little fellow. Because, you know, he used to come to the Dharma school here. When I first came here, we used to teach the little kids. I used to teach the little kids, and he was one of my little students there. So there's a sort of a fellow who didn't do well at school, but done wonderful in life. And I know why, because his mother was such a sharp, kind, and wise person. Brought up her kids beautifully. So you don't have to pass the exams to be successful in life. There's something else which is more important, which, you know, the whole family got from their mothers, beautiful emotional intelligence. So you don't have to be a winner on the squash course to be a happy person. Because the emotional intelligence says it doesn't matter who wins and who loses. It's just the joy you put into playing that match. That's what's most important. It's not the goal, but it's the journey. I don't know how many people in our life sacrifice the journey called life for these goals. I don't know how many times when you reach that peak, that goal, you pay off your mortgage, you know, you finally go to that wonderful holiday place, or whatever else you want to achieve, and you finally get it, and just how disappointing it is. Is this it? I don't know how many ladies have actually said, when they get married, their marriage day, the happiest day of their life, and they say to me, is this it? Well, look, one of the monks, Santuti, he's a great monk. He asked me as I'm coming in, what are you going to talk about? And I said, I don't know. He said, why do you talk about fish and chips? So I will tell fish and chip story now. This is my own experience, okay? But I was in Thailand for 9 years. And the food there was absolutely disgusting. And I've told many stories about the food there. I mean, you know, your dog wouldn't want to eat it. I'll tell you that, because this was in the northeast of Thailand. Anything which slithered, you had in your bowl. Literally. Now, what were the sort of things? Not just like boiled frog, snails, lizards, grasshoppers, ants' eggs, water buffalo afterbirth. This is what we ate. Disgusting stuff. So you can imagine just, you know, just when I came to Australia, I can get fish and chips, you know. And I dream of fish and chips. Even I was a vegetarian when I was dreaming of these things. But I dreamt of it, something. And at last, after about a year or two here in Australia, I was doing a funeral service for somebody. And the timing was that I couldn't get back to the monastery for the meal. So Ajahn Jaka, the other monk, was an abbot at the time. So he said, okay, just get yourself something on the way back. This was my chance. I could get hot fish and chips, you know, in paper. The whole works was in vinegar and salt, the whole works. Not like sometimes. Sometimes you get them in the monastery, but you put the chips or the fish in your bowl, and then you have to put curry on top of it, or the custard comes on it. It's just not the same, and it's all cold anyway, because you have to give all these blessings. That's the worst part. If ever you come to the monastery and sort of, you know, see how the monks actually eat, you know, we go down there and the food is actually hot when it goes in your bowl. By the time you're given all these blessings and all this rigmarole, you're looking at where it's all cold. This was the real thing, real fish and chips, nice and hot. And it was so disappointing. You know, for 9 years I dreamt of this moment. And this was it? What a waste of time. Because you know what I'm talking about? All these goals you have, all these dreams you have, all these things that when I get this, then I'll be happy. And how many times have you been disappointed? Now, if you actually do win that great competition, yeah, amazing, but then you think, is this it? You know, if you do get that gold medal at the Olympics, is this it? It doesn't last that long. Maybe 5 minutes, and then you're forgotten. The next event comes so shortly afterwards. So a lot of this winning and losing business, when you look at it with your own experience of life so far, when you reflect on other people's experience, why do we give so much importance to winning? And why, by giving so much importance to winning, do we create so much pain for the losers, which is the majority of us? Unnecessary pain. Unnecessary thinking that we are failed human beings, that there's some fault in us, that we are not up there with the real people. No, they're not the real people, we're the real people. The losers. Welcome to being a loser. If someone says you're a loser, say, yes, and I enjoy it so much. Because it's really being a human being, and it's enjoying the journey, not just worrying about sort of the goals. So whatever you do in your life, just all those things you dreamed of, when I win the lottery, then I will be happy. You all notice all these people, story after story of people who actually won that lottery, and they wish they'd never done that. They wish they'd never bought a ticket. That story which somebody sent me over the internet. A woman in UK who won £42 million on the British lottery. £42 million. And what was the first thing she did? Buy herself a mansion. This big, big house in the countryside. 1 year later, she put it on the market for sale. And the newspaper did an article on her, and somebody sent me this article. And the article, the sub-editor put the title, Honey, I Can't Find the Kids. It was such a big mansion, she could never find her children. There were just too many rooms. So she realized she'd lost contact with the people she loved and cared about. Big mansions become prisons. Lonely places, so huge, you never see each other. That is a tragedy in life. So this was just one example of others where she wished, actually she bought a very, very small unit, even though it didn't cost very much. She said, because when I'm poor or live like a poor person, I meet so many people. I'm not isolated by being a winner. So, please, tear up your lottery tickets. If you do win the lottery this weekend, give it away straight away. You got the donation boxes in the back over there. We're building a big hall for the bhikkhunis, the nuns, shortly. So be a loser. Because if you're a loser, it's as if you don't have... winning creates so many burdens and expectations on you. It's a terrible thing if you do win any competition. You're the champion. You have to defend your title the next year. Now, whatever time you succeed and win, it puts great pressure on you. That's why I say if you win the promotion, if you're competing with somebody at work to get up to the next level, please be a loser. Let the other person take the extra stress. Don't you have enough stress already in your life? Why on earth do you want the promotion? People are crazy. They come and complain to me, I lost the promotion, I didn't get it. So you lucky thing. You know, you already complain about how much stress you have before, and now you have this wonderful opportunity not to have stress by being promoted to the higher position, because higher position always means more work and more responsibility, doesn't it? They say, but then I get more money. But is it enough? Of course, it's never enough money. No matter how much money they give you, it's never enough. So better than never, not enough you get now, but the not enough which you get with extra stress. So in other words, be content with who you are and how you are. Be content with the great journey of life. I know that some people complain when I talk like this. Ajahn Brahm, what about the pursuit of excellence? The striving to be better? Yes, exactly. Strive to be an excellent, happy person. Strive for the pursuit of contentment. Work hard for the real goals in life. Be a real winner, not in the worldly sense, but be a winner of the human race. The race for peace, for contentment, for happiness. That's why what the world says of losers, they're the real winners. That's actually almost the exact quote what the Buddha said. He said, what the enlightened ones say is happiness, the world said is suffering. What the enlightened ones say is suffering, the world says is happiness. I'm adapting that. What the world says is losing, the enlightened ones say is winning. So what do we mean by that? Again, the monks, the nuns, you see, we've lost everything. We have no control over what we eat. And I've already said when we do eat it, it's all cold and everything's congealed. We don't have any control about what we can do. People are always calling us and asking us to do things. We don't have any assets. I don't have any superannuation. None of the monks have any safety net over here. We just sleep on the floor. We have such few possessions. We've given up so much. We're total losers. But we've won so much. So what have you won? You've won this beautiful sense of happiness and contentment. It's just being happy with little. And that means that whenever I travel, I'm traveling tomorrow morning. I just got a bag. That's all I need to carry with me. And again, when I came back just about a week ago from Malaysia, the guys at the airport stopped me and said, where's your suitcases? And I said, I don't carry suitcases. Where's your backpack? I don't have a backpack. That's why I don't have back pain. That's why you have back pain. You carry too much stuff around. I don't have headache because I don't carry too much worries around in my head. So when you carry things, that's when you get pain and suffering. So when I just said, I just look at my bags, all I've got, where is it? Here. This is my suitcase. So I go to Sri Lanka for 12 days. It's brilliant. And so I said, look, because I'm a monk. And it's wonderful seeing the reaction in these customs officers. And I've got no suitcases or baggages. And I say, because I'm a monk. And they go, oh yeah. I don't know why they miss this and this. But anyhow. And so they let me go through. Because they obviously, they actually really respect, because it's so rare. I've been in these airports and see people with these big trolleys. And even the trolleys can't hold all their suitcases. They keep falling off. And just trying to push them through. And it's just so hard. And so it's so wonderful being like, so I'm a loser. I've lost so much of my baggage in life. And therefore you win peace. So imagine if you lose all the guilt of your past and all the fear of your future. Lose all of that. And what have you won? This beautiful sense of freedom. To be able to enjoy every moment. Why? It's because the past is just distant memory. You've let it go. Who's done what to whom and why they did it? I don't care. That's way in the past. The future, who knows what's going to happen next? I don't know what's going to happen next. If the plane sort of crashes tomorrow when I'm flying to Sri Lanka, it doesn't matter. Beautiful, what a wonderful way to go. I've escaped the nursing home. You always look on the positive side of life. And so, whatever ways, I'm a winner both ways. So that way you've got no fear of the future at all. It's a really weird being a monk. Look, I literally don't know if anyone's going to feed me. Actually, yes, Singapore Airlines always feeds you. But, you know, if I wasn't flying, you don't know if someone's going to come to monastery tomorrow. They usually do. But it's not for sure. And that happened in the early years when we first came here, 27 years ago we first came to this place. You know, sometimes with another monk, we were living in this small house in North Perth, and sometimes people didn't come to feed you. Sometimes they forgot. And you'd look in the refrigerator, it was full of food. But you needed someone to present it. You couldn't take it for yourself. You could see it. You could smell it. But you couldn't take it. And there we were looking at the clock. 10 o'clock, 10:30, no one had come. 11 o'clock, 11:30, that's when we started praying. 12 o'clock. No one came. It didn't really matter, I didn't die. It's only just a great excuse for a fast. But this is just what happens in life. So you don't worry about anything. It's a great thing about being a monk. You know, actually you learn how to not to worry about the future. So you've actually lost one of the great burdens, fear of the future. Can you lose that? Let it go? Not worry about what's going to happen next. Then you become a winner. You've lost the fear of the future and you've won the joy of the present. All the stuff in the past. How many people carry around the past? I mentioned this last week. I think I mentioned it here or somewhere. About your photo albums. What do you put in your photo albums? Do you ever put the photo of your divorce in your photo album? Do you ever do the photo of when you come out of the doctor's surgery with your first chemotherapy? Do you ever take a picture of yourself in the toilet doing your business? Do you ever take in your house the picture of your rubbish bin, you know, the green wheelie bins? Do you ever take a picture of you and your partner when you go to visit the tip to take the rubbish? Here's me and my partner in the rubbish tip. You only put photos of beautiful things in your photo albums. You put few photos of your marriage ceremony, photos of your graduation, photos of, you know, your child's first birthday, photos of your holiday sort of in the beautiful Greek islands or something. Never of the rubbish tip. Never the visits to hospital. Why do you do that? Because these are beautiful memories. Why do you want to keep and cherish? But what do you keep in a photo album between your ears? What my father did to me when I was young. That teacher, what he did to me. Now, my ex, I've got a whole photo album just about him. All the ugly, terrible stuff. That's really crazy, isn't it? If you are going to keep any memories, keep the same pictures that you would keep in your photo album, in the drawer, in your home. Keep those beautiful memories. And all the rubbish photos, just it's very easy, you don't have to burn them now, just delete, delete, delete. That's always my favorite button on the computer. Delete. So find that button in your head and delete all the bad memories from the past. Delete, 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 delete. So you can lose all the pain of your past. And then you can also be a winner in this present moment. You're not burdened with what happened in the past. It's incredible just how people just take an event like, okay, Australia lost a cricket match. That was this morning. This is now. It's a long time ago. Ages ago. But why do people keep lingering on the pain of the past? Why do people remember what happened a week ago? Why are there still some monks still worrying about what happened 1 year and 3 months ago with the bhikkhuni ordination? That's long in the past. Let it go, for goodness sake. So why do we keep worrying about the pain of the past? Then we really are people who are not winning the journey of life. It doesn't matter where you come from, what's happened. It doesn't matter where you're going. The only life which really makes any sense is where you are right now. It's where you are. It's not the destination, it's not the origin, it's not when this game of cricket saw the first ball or the last ball of the match. It's the ball which is being bowled right now. And it doesn't matter what's happened before, it doesn't matter what's going to happen next. It's this particular ball which is called life. This particular shot, this particular moment. That is where we understand that winning and losing is all about past and future. And doesn't make any real sense. The real winner is a person who can let all that go and just be in this moment. And if you're in this moment, then you don't carry around any burdens at all from the past. You don't carry any burdens of the future. You are really free. That's what we really call a winner. A winner in the spiritual journey of life. Because they've lost so much. Lost so many burdens, lost so many causes of suffering, lost so many causes which stop you enjoying the person you're sitting next to right now when you're worrying about the person you met earlier on today, or you're worried about who you're going to have to meet later on this evening. All that problems and troubles which you have, please lose that. That's why the Buddha said, let go. Let go means lose things. And you know, the more you lose, the more you let go, the more you realize that what you already had from the very beginning was more than enough. And it's all this accumulation which we have. You know the amount of accumulation of goods you have in your house? Every time you move, you realize how much you've collected over the past year. We have a rule in our monastery that every monk has to move every 2 years. Have to move huts. Of course, it doesn't apply to me. Because I move enough from country to country, so that's fair enough. But when they do move, they cannot use the tractor or any monastery vehicle. They have to carry things themselves. And I made that rule a long time ago, because we do realize how much we accumulate in a couple of years. So the monks have to carry all their belongings from one hut to another. And that's when they realize just how much we've accumulated, so they can let go of things. Because we celebrate letting go, not accumulation. We celebrate losing things. And even in our meditation, to be a winner in meditation, you have to lose everything. Lose your body. lose your will, lose all past and future, lose this commentary, lose, and the more you've lost, the more free you feel. Because all this stuff, which we are, in Buddhist terms, attached to, they're all of our winnings of the past. We have to let all of that go and lose the whole lot to understand what real freedom is. Which is why that only when you've lost do you understand what freedom is. It really is better to have loved and lost than never to have lost at all. Because in that losing you understand attachments. And you understand the freedom from those attachments. It's just real peace. Peace at last. To be able to walk through this life with no worries, with no attachments, with no burdens, to be like the bird who can fly in whatever direction. And no attachment. I always like the idea of the birds when they have children. Birds are so smart. Not just like I said last week, the birds never carry suitcases when they go from country to country. You look in the sky and you never see a bird with a backpack. Not even a handbag. They're even better than me. I carry this. Birds don't carry this. But even better, when birds have their young, yeah, they look after their young, but as soon as their young are old enough to fly, they kick them out of the nest. They don't worry about their kids once they've sort of, you know, old enough to fly by themselves. Get out of here. We've done our bit, now you look after yourselves. How many of you could do that to your children? Wouldn't it be wonderful when they get 18 and 19? All right, off you go. You look after yourself now. And so you're free. Do you want to be free? No. Why? Because of attachments. And so it's really amazing. Sometimes, you know, their kids are 40, 50. And still the mother tells them to put on a pair of underpants in case they have an accident. They're crazy. Anyhow, that way you don't have to... Oh, I haven't told a joke here, haven't I? Oh, it was actually a winner and a loser joke. It's an old, I don't think I've said this for many, many years. It just shows you about just being a winner can sometimes be very, very dangerous. There was a story of this farmer. And, you know, he had an old rooster in his farm. And he had the chicks as well. He always wanted some, you know, more chickens. But he thought the old rooster was past it. So he went to the market and bought a much younger rooster, this young fellow. And, of course, you know, when there are two males in the farmyard, they have to have a fight for supremacy. It's just another nature. But the old rooster was very smart. You know, he'd been around a long time. And he said, look, if we have a fight... You know, you probably win, but, you know, you get very badly damaged because, you know, I've still, you know, got a sharp beak. So instead of actually fighting for who has all the chickens, we'll have a race. Three times around the farmyard. And whoever wins, you know, the winner will get all the female chickens and the loser will just have to go off into the bush. Deal? And this young chicken said, hey, you're an old guy. I can beat you easily. He said, yeah, I know that, but... Out of respect for my age and seniority, you have to give me like 5 meters start. And the young chicken, because young roosters are always really arrogant. 5 meters, take 10 meters, I can still catch you. Okay. So they had this race 3 times around the farmyard. And again, one of the female chickens had the gun to start the race. Bang. And off they go. And... You know, the old rooster, and even though he was advanced in years, he could still run pretty fast. You know, some of these old people like that, who's that, a person who won the Sydney to Melbourne Marathon a few years ago? Clint Young, yeah, I mean, how old was he? He was really old, he could really race. Just like this old chicken. And when he got round the first lap, you know, it was only the young one, had only caught up maybe about 1 meter. But on the second lap, you know, age began to tell, and the old rooster began to tire. And when they got to the front of the barn, you know, the young rooster was only about a meter behind, was catching up fast as the old rooster began to tire and start panting. And soon, the young rooster was just about to catch up with the old rooster when the farmer saw them. And the farmer took out his gun and blasted the young rooster, killed it dead. And he said, "What bad luck, another homosexual rooster."
Yeah, you get the story. So that's how the old rooster survived a long time. So don't try to win all the time.
So anyway, just to sum the story up. Yeah, I think our society, it just values winning in the wrong way far too much, creating a huge amount of psychological turmoil to those people who aren't in the elite. And this evening I was actually praising the so-called losers. You know, you're just the majority, the vast majority, and don't worry about losing because you join everybody else. And you don't have to strive so hard for an excellence which is just going to create more pain in this world. And in fact, that it's not really just whether you win or lose, or where you come from, or what the destination is. It's always the journey which is the most important thing in life. So don't just worry about your goals in life. Worry about how you're reaching those goals, what you're doing right now. The goal of life is right now, really. And to be a real winner in life, a spiritual winner. Yeah, other people might call you a loser. You be content and be happy with the person you're living with. Be happy with yourself. Be happy with your life. And then you really are a true winner. So that's the talk for this evening, winning and losing. So any comments or questions about this evening's talk? Yes, thank you.
You said you just travel with Mike to kiss him in the book. So do you wash the book?
Now that's why it's brown, you don't need to wash it so much. Yeah, of course you wash the robe, yeah. Oh no, you can get that wherever you go. People wash it for you, so you can wash it at night time. And then it's dry in the morning. And you've always like a spare sort of under robes. You don't need that much. The thing is, you don't need a different sort of set of clothes for different occasions. You don't have to dress up to go to dinner at night. You don't have to worry about sort of having pyjamas. That's actually when I went to hospital, about 20 years ago now, I went to Rockingham Hospital for a checkup, stayed overnight, actually 6 or 7 nights or 5 nights, whatever. And as soon as you checked in there, the first thing they asked you, "Where's your pyjamas?" And so the answer was that monks don't have pyjamas. And then I looked at them and said, "You can either have these robes or nothing. Take your choice." And they said, "We'll take your robes." So they allowed me to wear robes in hospital, because that's all I had. It's either that or be naked, and they sort of didn't want that, so it had to be robes. So, you know, you don't need all this stuff. So because you don't have fashion, you don't need a dress for this and robes for that and something else. It's very easy. Just one pair of robes and one spare for washing. Life is very easy. So I've lost a sense of fashion. And you don't have to carry a comb or a brush or hairspray. This is very easy too. Life is very easy. So I've lost so much. Lost so many possessions in life, but I've won so much freedom. Think about it. Any other questions? Yeah. That's right, yeah, it's a very, very advanced, takes a lot of skill, but absolutely no fitness at all. It's just a game people play in pubs in England, just little counters, and you sort of flick one counter into a pot. That's what it was. It's a totally ridiculous game. Yeah, great fun, because no one could take it seriously. And it was like a joke sport. And because it was a joke sport, that's what I wanted to do, because so many other sports people take so seriously and they strive, they get so upset if they lose. I mean, sometimes, you know, some soccer games actually kill people. Was it in the World Cup? There was some goalkeeper or something letting a stupid goal, and when he went back to Colombia or something, someone murdered him. It was amazing. People take it far too seriously. So anyway, we should have a Buddhist World Cup. They have a lot of fun. We'd always lose, but we'd have great fun losing. Okay, at the back, last question, yeah. How have you become a monk? My girlfriend dumped me, and I became a monk to forget. Nah. Because, look, I wanted a bit more meaning in life. And, okay, you know, you were a high-flight academic clean, you met all these other successful people. I remember having dinner with a Nobel laureate in chemistry. When you saw these people, I thought, my goodness, is this it? You get a Nobel Prize and this the result of it? The person wasn't really happy. So I realized that if I really want to be a winner in life, again, seeing great sports people, or seeing some great academics, seeing very rich people, it didn't sort of thought, no, that's not what I wanted. There was something missing there. They weren't winning, not real winning. They didn't have this beautiful peace and happiness. So I became a monk because I wanted to be peaceful and happy and content. And I realized that's what I really wanted in life. Not wealth, not riches, not sort of the most beautiful girl in sort of the world. I just wanted to be happy and peaceful. And when I saw some Buddhism, and especially Buddhist monks, and nuns, there was a couple of nuns I remember meeting. They sort of exuded this wonderful sense of being at peace with themselves and being happy. They didn't need things for their happiness. They didn't need people around to be happy. If there were people around, fine. If they weren't around, fine. If they got things, fine. If they got fish and chips, fine. If they got, water buffalo after birth, fine. There's a beautiful sense of being at peace no matter what. And that's what really attracted me. That's what I wanted to win in life. Happiness. That's called emotional intelligence. So, win what is really worthwhile winning. And lose all this other stuff, which isn't really worth much at all. Okay, so that's enough for this evening on winning and losing.
Arahant Sama Sambuddho Bhagava Buddhang Bhagavantang Abhivademi Suvakato Bhagavata Dhammo Dhammang Namassami Supatipanno Bhagavato Savaka Sangho Sankhang Namami.